Choosing Donald Trump. That's a new book by Stephen Mansfield, who is a New York Times best-selling author. The subtitle says God, Anger, Hope, and Why Christian Conservatives Supported Him. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Stephen, so great to have you on the program. Thank you.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, I'll bet, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, but if you were to go back 2 years ago and tell your average Christian, oh, most Christians, most evangelicals in this country, at least white evangelicals, are going to vote for Donald Trump as president. In fact, the number is 81%. I'll bet you a betting man would have said that's impossible.
Oh, there's no question. Nobody thought, even when he declared, that he was going to make the presidency or even get out of the primaries. But it was the perfect storm to propel him forward. And so, obviously, it's given us this man who, you know, is obviously intending to champion many of the causes that evangelicals care about, and we'll see whether he actually does or not. But yes, the perfect storm happened, and it's a big surprise for everyone, I think.
One of the chapters in your book deals with Norman Vincent Peale and explains why this man, who the power of positive thinking, who was a pastor in the, what was it, the Christian Reformed tradition in New York City,
yes,
that he played a role in Donald Trump's thinking and even his religious views. Comment on that, if you would.
Well, Donald Trump likes powerful speakers. He likes people who proclaim the truth of God. He is just enamored of them. And Norman Vincent Peale was the main pastor to Donald Trump and his family for years and years and years. He attended Marble Collegiate Church in Manhattan. And Norman Vincent Peale was the chaplain to his family, did weddings, did building dedications, did funerals, etc. The interesting thing about Norman Vincent Peale is that while privately and in his immediate church, he proclaimed what he called the born-again gospel, publicly in big meetings around the country and around the world, he was very much the kind of motivational speaker that we're familiar with today. You know, your words change your reality. If you can conceive it, you can achieve it. Power of Positive Thinking, obviously, the title of his famous book. And so I don't want to accuse him of having had two gospels, but in terms of how people related to him, there were two very distinct messages. One was very much the kind of born-again gospel most of us would be familiar with, and the other was more of a motivational speak, more of the Tony Robbins kind of perspective that we're familiar with today. So,
let's say
Donald Trump drank from the one, not the other.
Yeah, and by the way, I chafe a little bit at the Tony Robbins reference only because Tony Robbins strikes me as New Age. It's almost as if there's two strands of motivational speakers. Seriously, there's the Zig Ziglar. I would put Norman Vincent Peale in that category. Jim Rohn, where they're talking about the Bible and so forth. Even Joel Osteen, in some ways, you know, there's a bit of a positive thinking message there. But the other side would be more of the New Age, and, you know, there would be, you know, almost no emphasis on the Bible in any way, on the other wing of it. But what about Paula White? You have a whole chapter about her, and she's kind of a controversial pastor on the TV.
She is very controversial, and in terms of her history, her divorce, her leading of the church. I mean, that is what has propelled her to prominence. Her role in Donald Trump's life is a little bit different. He heard her speak. He likes to watch television preachers late at night, or at least he used to. And he came across a sermon series she was doing on vision. And he was very enamored of it and called her and then offered for he and his wife to meet her. And Paula White became kind of a chaplain to the people in Trump's company and a confidant and a friend. And when he decided to run for president, he asked her to host gatherings of clergy around the country. And she knew many of them. Some were a little suspicious of her, obviously. They wouldn't have really related to her very well. But when she said, all I want you to do is hear out this man, Donald Trump, and share your thoughts and concerns with him, they agreed to attend. And so she pulled together very important meetings of clergy around the country, a lot of what we would call television preachers, a lot of religious leaders of various stripes, Jewish rabbis, Orthodox patriarchs, etc. And that had obviously did two things. First of all, it informed Donald Trump about the issues of concern to the nation's leading clergy. But it also caused them to gain confidence in him. And this is part of what helped deliver 81% of white evangelicals into his hands at the election, as you say.
Okay, now, I've interviewed George Barna for this radio program, and we were talking about his book about the day Christians changed America. It was all about the, you know, the Trump presidency. When I first saw your book, I thought, oh, this is kind of the same book, just a different twist, maybe not without the scholarly, or not the, you know, without the statistics, if you will.
Sure.
And it's not. It's not the same book, but I do want to ask you about one thing that there may be some overlap here, and that is this. There was a meeting with Donald Trump and about 1,000 evangelicals in June of 2016, and this was a turning point. And Barna talked about it, and he was there. And I want you to comment on that. I remember even after it happened, I had on this radio program Kelly Shackelford, who's an attorney fighting for Christian liberties with First Liberty. And he said, you know, Trump said, look, I'll give you a good Supreme Court nominees, et cetera. And he's been true to that word. But comment on that meeting, if you're familiar with it, and the implications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was a very, very important meeting. It was the first time that Donald Trump had addressed that large a crowd of evangelicals, other than perhaps, you know, speaking at the convocation at Liberty University years ago. And it was the one of the only ones of that size that he did specifically with evangelicals while he was a candidate. And I think it did turn things dramatically. I think he had by that point, and I don't mean this to sound as cynically as it's going to sound, he had at that point learned how to speak the language of evangelicals. I think he genuinely reflected the concerns of evangelicals. He knew that the Supreme Court was the big issue for evangelicals. He had also become concerned about the Johnson Amendment,
yes,
and he addressed all of those things at that meeting. And I think people sitting there who had always seen him as the secular playboy, cutthroat businessman from New York, began to realize that he, as Dr. Jeffer says often, that basically a secular real estate mogul might become the greatest champion of religious liberty that we've had in recent American history. And so that meeting was very, very decisive.
Yeah, that's interesting. Comment, if you would, about Donald Trump and the Bible.
Well, it's interesting. Donald Trump loves the Bible, collects Bibles, reads it occasionally. Obviously, we all know that he mangles his attempts to quote it or to refer to it, gets things wrong often. But he does have high regard for it. It has profoundly impacted his life. His mother said at one point to a clergyman that she had made sure that biblical truth was in the hearts of her children and that they memorized it. So he must have some memorized. So it's something he has a high regard for. Of course, the press tends to always emphasize where he doesn't get the quote quite right or you know, conflates books of the Bible and what have you. But it's something he has regard for, something he wants to see proclaimed, something he wants to see spread. And, of course, I think the way that tends to come out is when he talks about Christmas or he talks about freeing up the pulpit through abolishing the Johnson Amendment, et cetera.
I heard him speak at the Values Voters Summit of 2015 and also the one in 2017, first time a U.S. sitting president addressed that group. But the first time in 15, he was holding up his childhood Bible. He said, I received this when I was in sixth grade in Sunday school or something like that. And you almost got the impression that he hadn't opened it, you know, since he found it in the attic a couple weeks ago or something.
Exactly.
In all these years. But he held it up as almost like a prop. But he said at the end of the speech, he said, this, meaning the Bible, this is the key.
Well, and this is what's so endearing and frustrating about Donald Trump at the same time. Here he holds up a Bible that he probably hasn't broken the spine on. He kind of naively says, and look, my mother even wrote my address in it, you know, and the press, of course, scoffs at that later. I think he's a man who has regard for the Christian faith, has regard for Scripture, but is not deeply immersed in it himself, if that makes any sense. I think he regards the Bible. He's heard a lot of Bible from Norman Vincent Peale. His mother made him memorize Scripture. But I don't know that in his adult life, and we have to remember that he's in his 70s now, that he has devoted himself to it. So he regards it. He will act in its best interest, I think, in some of his decisions while in the Oval Office. But no, he's not a man you want quoting Scripture, teaching Sunday school, or even giving an apologetic for the Christian faith publicly.
Hmm. He quotes 2 Corinthians, that kind of thing. All right, and by the way, some of the news media have done that as well. You know, they've said things like, you know, 1 Corinthians 13. All right, Stephen Mansfield.
By the way, I should say quickly that I grew up in Europe, and that's a standard way of referring to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The Bible, that's just cultural. I didn't see that as a matter of ignorance. I thought that was all silliness.
Did you earn a PhD in history? Is that right?
I did.
That's fantastic. Studying where?
Thank you. I have a couple of degrees. One is at Whitfield Theological Seminary, which is one of my favorite schools. And then I did my undergraduate and later worked at Oral Roberts University.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah, and you've written some best-selling books. What, mostly of an historical nature, including political figures, what was the reason that you decided to write this book? Was there some sort of catalyst event?
I think it just continues in the line of a number of books I've written. I wrote The Faith of George W. Bush. I wrote The Faith of Barack Obama. I wouldn't have written a book entitled The Faith of Donald Trump because I'm not sure that his faith is as defining of him as a public person as the other two, as with the other two, although very different faiths between George W. Bush and Barack Obama. But I did want to understand the issue, the religious issues around the election. I think that the election of Donald Trump is one of the most fascinating religious events in American politics of recent history. And I think also that the evangelicals who supported him and gave him such full-throated endorsement will have to manage now the blowback, the backlash against him that happens every single day. I mean, there's just no question that there is a not only anti-Trump, we knew that there would be an anti-Trump sentiment in the press, but there's also an emerging anti-evangelical, anti-Christians who supported, or religious conservatives who supported Donald Trump movement as well. So we're seeing that happen. I could get a sense of it back during the election, and I wanted to sort of lay the foundation for understanding that.
And I think you use the phrase prophetic distance. That and by the way, that should always be the case with the you know, the church is the conscience of the nation, to quote Martin Luther King Jr.
Sure.
And the church, when the church sometimes embraces the political figures too much, you know, then when those political figures disappoint, you know, then it's like, oh, you know, it's like Billy Graham visiting with Richard Nixon all the time, you know, whatever, you know, oh, that doesn't
right,
look good.
Exactly.
You know, so, comment on that prophetic distance.
Well, let me just say quickly that I'm definitely conservative and therefore am thrilled for many of the issues that Donald Trump champions.
And by the way, he has accomplished a lot, even in the last, you know, 10 months. It's crazy.
Yes, there's no question.
Great Supreme Court justice, et cetera.
Exactly. But I also believe that when religious figures endorse a candidate, they ought to be careful. We want to maintain what I call in the book, as you say, prophetic distance. We want to call that candidate or that person to their best. We want to hold up biblical values to them, but we don't necessarily want to become part of their PR team. We don't want to necessarily, to use the crass phrase that's used in American politics, get into bed with them. And I do have to say that I think a lot of conservative leaders, again, out of being traumatized by the Obama years and terrified of the possibility of a Hillary Clinton presidency, they went too far with Donald Trump. They didn't maintain prophetic distance. And now, to use the slang phrase, they own him. They are connected with him. They're wed to him. And he's an unknown to a large extent. Yes, he's championing a lot of things that I hold dear, I'm sure you hold dear, religious liberty, you know, pro-life positions, conservatives on the Supreme Court, rule of law, etc. But he also does a lot of things that generates a lot of animosity in this society, and that's going to get poured out on those Christians, those religious conservatives who stood with him so firmly, and frankly helped to rebrand him. We don't have to paint him as the ideal Christian, as Billy Graham too, in order to say we're going to vote for him because of his positions on certain issues. And I think we're going to see a real contest, a real tension in our culture when it comes to the blowback against those religious conservatives who supported him and did so in such an unbridled way.
Choosing Donald Trump is the name of the book by Stephen Mansfield, ChoosingDonaldTrump.com. In 15 seconds or less, we'll close on this. Do you think he's born again?
I am told he is newly born again, and that's as much as I know. After that, we have to go with the biblical standard, Matthew 7, of knowing by his fruits.
Stephen Mansfield, StephenMansfield.tv, and also, again, ChoosingDonaldTrump.com. Thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Great to be with you, Jerry. Thank you so
too
much.
God bless. Bye-bye.